Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Texans up one, but here's Brandon McManus. 45-yard attempt, left hash mark. Snap is down. The kick is up, and it's good. The Texans lose as time expires. 24-22 to the Green Bay Packers. Heartbreaker at Lambeau Field.
Our keys to victory this week was executing and finish. Like, we didn't execute well enough. All the way across the board, we didn't execute well enough, and we didn't finish the game. Credit to the Packers. They finished it the right way, made the plays when they needed to make it, and they finished the game the right way. But for us to play how we play, you know, offensively is just not good enough for us. We have to play better. Guys have to execute better, have to step up.
Yeah, that's an understatement. That is an understatement. Welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to all of you. Happy Reaction Monday to all of you. Ain't all that happy, but hope you had a good weekend. We are here for you. Seth and I are here for the next couple hours. We're here for you all day long here on Sports Radio 610. After the Texans, I have a hard time saying let one get away. They were lucky to be in this game, considering how they played offensively. They did something that only 6% of teams have done in this category since 2010, lost a game where they were +3 in turnover margin. 94% of the time, teams win the game when they are +3 in turnover margin since 2010. Thanks to Texans Cap for that stat. The gloves are off this morning, man. How you doing this morning, my friend?
So the Texans came out and said, listen, if we learned one thing from the Astros, it's that you can't let them count you out. Just because there's only a 6% chance. People wanted to say, hey, the Astros can't make the playoffs with a bad start like this. Texans said, hey, you can't lose. All these people are saying you can't lose a game where you're +3 in the turnover ratio.
Yeah.
We're going to do it. We're going to go out and do it.
Man. Let me start off by issuing a PSA right now to the family members of any of the Texans' offensive linemen yesterday. I'm talking about the Tunsil family, the Green family, the Scruggs family, the Mason family, and the family of Titus Howard. You've been issued the PSA at 6:02 that this is not going to go well for your family member today. This is not going to go well at all. And quite frankly, it's long overdue. They've not been good this year. They've really not been good over the course of the last year and a half. There have been fits and starts here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday was an abomination. Yesterday was an embarrassment. They should all be embarrassed over what happened yesterday with that offensive line. I saw a cut-up before the game on the NFL Network where they were talking about the Texans and the Packers, and they were showing all the free runners that just run right at C.J. Stroud throughout games this season. And I said, man, that is really jarring because I don't see that happening to a lot of other quarterbacks. And boy, do I see C.J. Stroud. The gist of the whole thing was this is the magic that C.J. Stroud can make with his right arm with this janky-ass offensive line in front of him. Unfortunately, the magic ran out yesterday. That was a complete abomination, an embarrassment. They're going to get their quarterback killed. I don't know what the issue is up front. I don't think it's physical. I think it's mental. Chris Strausser is finally catching some strays for what appears to be, at a minimum, a very mediocre or horribly coached offensive line, or an offensive line that's just not grasping the message that's being handed to them on a weekly basis, because That was anxiety-inducing yesterday. I am so nervous about what could happen to C.J. Stroud. This offensive line looks like they can't handle the most basic of blitzes right now, Seth.
No, and they do things, too, that because the offensive line can't be trusted, some of the protections they're in does end up putting stress on the tight ends and the running backs because they have to block big people and to make up for the remedial full turn protections that the offensive line will have to employ, and it's just bad. It's really bad. I mean, like, this is where we are. This is after facing the Packers, and I know that there's a lot of people out there who get really upset. I don't know how these people exist. They get really upset after you lose a close game because, hey, fellas, they were out there and they were competing. No. Were they really? They were +3 in the turnover ratio, and they were barely hanging on, and they got worse in the second half. This is a mediocre offense right now. Like, there's no way to slice it. Scoring, otherwise, whatever you want to look at it, it's a mediocre, middling offense, and yet they're being paid a whole lot of money to be mediocre and middling, and that includes the offensive line. The offensive line is just a hodgepodge of misery from one play to the next, almost without theme or they're inconsistently inconsistent. You can't even pick which guy's going to score. One play might be Titus Howard just falling on his ass and then somehow looking to the officials for help. I don't know. I have to go back and watch that play. He fell on his bottom side, and then he looked to the officials. I'm guessing he thought the defensive end was offsides. I don't know what to say about it anymore either, Sean, because I know what the fans say, which is, how is this every year? Different coaches, different GMs. How is the offensive line, almost for every year of the Texans' existence, other than a precious small window in the Gary Kubiak days when you had multiple offensive linemen going to the Pro Bowl?
Yeah,
you know, back to the Dwayne Brown and Wade Smith and Chris Myers in those days. It's an ongoing headache, and it's not an impressive offense.
No,
there's impressive individuals on the offense, but it's not an impressive offense whatsoever right now.
No, it's not. And the excuse before was, well, they built, boy, not the excuse, but the issue was, boy, they can't run the football. Well, they ran the football yesterday, but I'm not giving the offensive line full offensive line credit for 115-yard rusher. If Damian Pierce is getting the 25 carries in that game yesterday and not Joe Mixon, it's 25 carries for 62 yards, not 25 carries for 115 yards like Mixon had yesterday.
And most of Mixon's yardage came in the first half. The second half, it really wasn't, I don't think, as much about adjustment by the defense as much as anticipation by the defense. When they start to realize, okay, this is what the Texans are doing, okay, and you do some nice, you guys think you're having fun pulling guards and having tight ends block defensive ends, and that's all good, but now we're just going to physically destroy you, because we've seen it. And in the second half, that's when some guys got really trucked physically, just disused. I mean, the Kenyon Green experiment, it's been fun. Sure, the Texans could have drafted two much better football players, Kyle Hamilton or the
Jordan
I don't
Davis.
Know how the defense Jordan, yeah, I don't Jordan know how Jordan Davis. Davis is doing.
He's doing better than Kenyon Green, I can promise you.
Yeah, Kenyon
that.
Green's just a mess. Yeah. So, and as people have pointed out, as aggressive as the Texans were in free agency and in the offseason, they really didn't do anything to bolster the interior offensive line other than say, let's see. Let's see what they can do. They ain't doing much.
Yeah.
Not doing much.
Nope. Then the texts are already rolling in here, and they will all morning. 713-572-4610. That's my theme for this game. Now, we'll get to D'Amico Ryans in the second segment of the show. They did not lose this game because of the defense. I thought the defense, especially considering how undermanned they were, did a really good job yesterday. That's a good offense. They held them to 24 points, and three of them were on a last-second field goal. So I thought the defense did its job. I thought the special teams did their job. This game was lost up front in the trenches by the offense. And I think, for me, Seth, the most nerve-wracking thing, it's a couple of things. One, just the very basic part of the danger that C.J. Stroud has put in every Sunday behind this offensive line. You know, he's the future of this team. And my hope is that when the future evolves, that these five men in front of him, at least most of them, will not be in front of him anymore. But that's where I go secondarily with this, is that I feel like if there were a position group on this team that were performing at this level in any other room in that building, there is, put the position coaches aside, like, these are grown men that need to look in the mirror at their performance right now, especially considering how much some of those guys are paid on the offensive line. If there were an issue in the wide receiver room, I think there are guys in the wide receiver room that would be able to self-police. I think if there were an issue in the running back room, the linebacker room, certainly. D-line room, absolutely. Secondary, for sure, that would self-police and say, hey, guys, let's get our act together here. Let's get our bleep together here. I don't feel that way about the offensive line room. I don't feel like the leader that they have in that room is not a guy who's grabbing them, I don't feel, grabbing them by the lapels right now and go, guys, if we don't achieve our goals this year, we are going to be the reason for that.
He'd rather give advice on which designer to give you fancy velvet lapels.
That's exactly
for
right.
The sports coat that you're going to wear out to the club.
Somebody texted the show yesterday, the post-game show, and they said, this is a Chardonnay offensive line. We need beer drinkers on the offensive line.
Yeah. These guys are all getting ready for the Catalina wine mixer.
Yeah.
And they need to be going off to drink a Schlitz. Somewhere at some. You need to be. They need to be more. They need to be headbanging Trent Williams, Jason Kelce types. And instead, no. I feel like they're trying to find the. They're all upset over the demise of the skinny jean.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, that's. I thought they were so formed.
It was a hell of an era. It was a good time. It was a hell of a time.
I'll tell you what, the Italians don't dress like this.
Yeah. 11 TFLs. yesterday. That doesn't so for okay. So for all the times where CJ almost got his head taken off, there were 7 pressures in this game, and it felt like there were 100 pressures in this game, according to, or maybe 7
of the time.
Yeah, 50%. Maybe so. Yeah. Maybe 7 QB hits. Maybe. Well, I know it was 4 sacks. He was pressured. Depending on which website you go to, I've seen anywhere from 48% to 55% of the time. Mm-hmm. It felt like more. So they were horrible protecting CJ Stroud. They also allowed 11 TF in
11
a game.
11 tackles for a loss,
in a game where a running back ran for 115 yards, there somehow were 11 TFLs in there, including 2 on the final drive of the game, the final series of downs of the game, where the Texans, D'Amico said they were trying to score. I just don't believe him. I believe they were playing for a field goal in that instance. 11 TFLs. You want some context on that? Third most in a game since 2000. That happened yesterday.
Third most in a game since 2000. Somebody yesterday, after I tweeted out that graphic, said, hey, all right, look, they were going against a good defense. That's it. Oh, I didn't realize that whenever you face a good defense, you allow the third most of something.
Shut the hell. That person should shut down their account.
Doesn't seem mathematically possible that every time you face a good defense, you should have the third most of something. Going back more than 2 decades. I don't think the math's on that one. Yeah. But still, point taken, I suppose.
If you feel
they're bad. And the other, the game management side of things, too. Both D'Amico and Bobby Slowick, there's just something. I don't know how they regressed in terms of game management.
It's bad.
They were really impressive with game management last year.
Yep.
This year, they've regressed.
It's bad, and we're going to get into that in the next segment. There was some good. There was D'Amico Ryans, the defensive coordinator, I thought had a hell of a game yesterday. I thought that defense, they played well enough to win that game. They gave the offense multiple opportunities to try to win this game. D'Amico, the head coach and game manager, it might honestly, in terms of decision making, might have been his worst day as a Texans head coach.
And there's another guy too, two guys that like you don't want to criticize, but Tank Dell. I mean,
who?
I just Tank Dell.
Who is he? Who's Tank Dell?
He's the guy that dropped the pass that hit his hands
in the beginning of the game. That's
in
right.
The end zone.
I blacked that
right.
Out.
Yeah. That was the thing. Like that could have been enough points there.
I'm mad today. I'm angry today. And this was a game that I was. This was a game. I don't want to put it this way, but I can't think of another way to put it. Going to break. I went into that game being okay with them and the possibility of losing this game because of how undermanned they were. It's an NFC game. They got the Colts next week. All those things. Not like that, man. Not like that. So you can tell where we're at with all this today. The tale of two D'Amicos yesterday. We have to get into this because there were some botches yesterday, man, that really cost the Texans. Thought the defense was great. I thought the game management was not. We'll get to that coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, great to be with you on a Monday. It was not great yesterday. 24-22, the final score. We'll get into headlines next. Some interesting headlines going on around the league. Last night, during the day, the Deshaun Watson story is a big one. If you missed it, ruptured Achilles, done for the year. Yeah, we'll get into that in headlines. That is a deep cut headline up in Cleveland.
Those stories that I'm jealous that people get to talk about privately and make jokes on their own as opposed to, you know.
Well, and the crowd reaction yesterday is the big story up there.
It's unacceptable. I'll tell you. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get into it. We'll get into it in headlines. Let's stick with the Texans from yesterday. We dug into the offensive line. We'll give the offensive line a break. Offensive line, you can sit on the bench for a little bit. We'll get back to you in headlines. D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Close game. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny on coaching decisions in a game like that. When the coach is also the de facto defensive coordinator, he's the one calling the plays. There'll be a lot of scrutiny there, too. Let's start with the good. I thought the defense played. I thought the defense put forth a winning effort yesterday. Based on the performance of the defense, they should have won that game yesterday. They forced 3 turnovers. I thought, as we anticipated, Seth, especially after that texter pointed out who the head coach of this team is, a former elite-level linebackers coach in D'Amico Ryans, I thought Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen, I thought they did a pretty good job yesterday, considered.
I mean, I don't know how many slants Romeo Doubs caught over the middle. I think it was 47 on the day. There were some weaknesses over the middle of the field, yes. But in general, I think given the weaknesses of the defense and how they managed it, I thought they did a good job of it. And that's ultimately, you know, obviously you got to hold Jordan Love to not getting in field goal position there at the end of the game.
Yeah.
But I know that they're like, it feels like they were playing prevent defense. They did blitz a couple times on that drive. I think they had to manage with what they had and what they couldn't do. The pass rush came up big at times yesterday.
Yes.
But really, yeah, D'Amico and the game management at the end of the game, and then also D'Amico and not challenging the lateral,
yeah,
were the two things where you're just like, what's going on here? Like, that was clearly a lateral. Call a timeout at least to wait and see.
Yep.
It's just there was some game management stuff that just didn't make a lot of sense.
We'll dig into those in a second here for sure. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game. Again, we're on good D'Amico right now. D'Amico, de facto DC, A-plus yesterday. Not A-plus, probably an A-minus yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryans on how did he feel the reserves played today?
Thought our guys did a good job defensively, but at the end of the day, we didn't make enough plays to win the game. No matter who's out there, there's no excuses. We got to play our technique the right way and make plays when it's our time to make a play.
Yeah, and they didn't. At the end of the game, yeah, I mean, that's you got to make a play at the end of the game if you want to win. This was a game that was going to be put on the defense. You could tell that very early on. For some perspective on how well the defense played, Seth, the snap counts came out. Aaron Wilson posted them this morning. These are the players that played 100% of the snaps for the Texans yesterday. Neville Hewitt, Eric Murray.
Ooh.
Let's see here. Jake Hansen, Jalen Petrie, Kalen Bullock, Derek Stingley Jr., and D'Angelo Ross.
Mm-hmm.
D'Angelo Ross, Jake Hansen, Neville Hewitt are among the players that played 100% of the snaps in the game yesterday.
Yeah, look, and D'Angelo Ross obviously was going to be a focal point of the Packers, whereas Mac Jones and the Patriots somehow decided to not test D'Angelo Ross.
Drake Maye.
You know what? They weren't as capable of testing D'Angelo Ross. That wide receiving core for the Packers is just a really good across the board, guys that can threaten. They're deep, yes. And it's not so easy just to disguise or protect defensively because they've got multiple guys that can do damage, obviously, we saw.
So I was happy with the defense. And honestly, it's particularly the linebacker thing made me feel better if indeed these, you know, if the Henry Toa's concussion situation is a serious one where it's a multi-week thing, if Azeez Al-Shaair's knee would, you know, if that's a serious thing. We never know, and D'Amico would never say, you know, how much of the management of these injuries has to do with the fact that empirically the game coming up against Indy is a far more important game than Green Bay is a better team than Indianapolis. Make no mistake about that. But this Indianapolis home game, I mean, you can really put a stranglehold on the division this coming weekend by sweeping the Colts and being 3-0 in the division. So how much of it is trying to kind of play the middle on that whole thing? We don't know. But the defense played well yesterday. Okay, now I hate this because we got to get to this part because I love D'Amico Ryans and I think he's a really good head coach. This was, as a game manager, it was his worst day as the Texans head coach yesterday, in my opinion, based largely on two sequences in the game. The first one, as you pointed out, there was the play where it was called an incomplete pass. Jordan Love kind of flips a pass out to the left side to, I think it was Jaden Reed. And he didn't catch it. It was very questionable at game speed and to the naked eye if it was a lateral. The Texans played through the whistle like it was a lateral. I believe it was Foley Fatakasi who fell on the football. It was called an incomplete pass. Replay showed, in my mind, that it was at least worth throwing a challenge flag. I don't know if you would have won it. But the upside of winning it was that you get possession of the football. And number two, clearly there was some confusion going on defense play where throwing the flag would have been the equivalent of a timeout and you get the best of both worlds right there.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the rules advisor thought that it was a lateral.
Team's territory, yeah.
You just didn't have and then we heard that D'Amico was jumping around on the sideline. So I thought at first maybe there was some kind of some kind of issue with them not getting the challenge buzzer.
He was
or
waving like a maniac over there.
So there was something discombobulated in the defensive backfield, and obviously it didn't work out. Yeah, that
scored
was,
a touchdown on that play.
That was frustrating. Yeah. And it was a clear recovery. People asking, yes, it was blown dead, but it was a clear recovery. So they, if it's a clear recovery, they would have given it to him.
Yep. Yeah. Then there's the end of the game. Texans got the ball with about 5-6 minutes left in the game. Did a fantastic job of matriculating down the field, burning clock. And I'll preface this by saying there have been times this year where I thought the game management has been good at the end of the game. I gave D'Amico Ryans, we have multiple segments on this show talking about what a masterclass the final drive against the Jaguars was. And it was. Everything from moving the ball to burning the clock to making the Jags use their timeouts, all of those things. Yesterday was an abomination. And look, some of it had to do with the fact that the offense itself was an abomination. I don't know what the message was. And this answer by C.J. Stroud we're going to hear in a second here is troubling to me. We'll get to that. But here was D'Amico Ryans after the game yesterday when he was asked about what was the goal of the final drive. What were you trying to do on the final drive?
Yeah, our goal is always to go score. That's our goal. Like, they did a good job of stopping us, didn't get in. So, you know, obviously we didn't pass the ball well all day, right? So it wasn't good all the way around. We ran the ball well, thought Joe did a good job of running the ball. And, you know, we needed to pass it. It was not good enough, starting with the protection. Now, if we can't protect, and that's going to be difficult for the quarterback to make the plays.
Okay, so go and score, you know, there's no follow-up. Do you mean a touchdown? Do you mean a field goal? Do you, right? I mean, go and score.
Yeah.
I guess if there weren't this controversy over how it was handled, we would think he meant touchdown. Let me play CJ here real quick, Seth, then I'll get your thoughts on this. Because CJ was asked what was the goal on the final drive as well. Here was his answer.
I just try to execute every play that I can, that I get called. I really don't know the philosophy right then and there. You know, I'm trying to talk to D'Amico, but I really can't get over there. But, you know, what it seemed like, we were trying to just run out the clock and then, you know, try to kick a field goal before, you know, we ended up, having to throw the ball on third down and, you know, they'll give them the ball back with a minute and like 40 left. So, I think that it was a good plan. Just got to ask you better.
Okay.
Yeah,
so before we get into the nooks and crannies of the play calls here, what are your thoughts on that?
So this is the thing, and going back and trying to figure out, all right, you're trying to grind clock here, obviously, running the ball. And I think maybe because they'd gotten down into the red zone in the first half and run the ball effectively, Joe Mixon had a couple of nice goal line or extreme red area runs
in
down there.
The first
there.
Half, yes.
The mistake they made was thinking, oh, we're a team that can run the ball when we need to run the ball now.
Right.
But you're trying to, so I can't fault them for trying to run the ball and burn clock there. On that second 12 run, it was a combination of Kenyon Green and Titus Howard just getting destroyed by their individual guys. Yeah. I mean, there was nothing exotic about that. They just, Kenyon Green got blown up into the backfield. The three technique came clean. Titus Howard made a vague stab at trying to block the defensive end, but he came down and made the tackle. It was just, it was bad all around. And then, though, it's third and 15. You've been trying to chew clock. The Packers have one more timeout that they would have had to use if you had run the ball again or show, run a draw or a screen or something like that. But they choose to throw an out short of the sticks that, even if it had been whether it was a catch or not, was going to stop the clock because you're going out of bounds.
Yeah.
It didn't, and it doesn't. You were already in chip shot field goal range.
That doesn't get you. Kaimi can kick it from the 40-yard line. Yeah,
and I did. I said it right before. I tweeted it out in the moment. I was like, "Oh, he's going to pass, isn't he?" Yeah. Which is usually I've made excuses for Bobby Slowick in the past and D'Amico Ryans in these situations. I can't make an excuse for this.
No,
this is just the Packers end up preserving their timeout.
Yeah.
It's the field goals. Not hardly any easier to make than it would have been right from there at the 17-yard line. I don't get it.
It made no sense. Throwing on third down, when clearly your dual goal is, hey, maybe we can run the football and kind of grind this thing out, but at the very least we're running the football and they're burning their timeouts.
Yeah.
You run a play where 99% of the outcomes stop the clock.
So yeah.
Either he catches it and lands on the sideline and he's out of bounds, Tank Dell, or it's incomplete like it was and it stops. The only excusable passing in that situation, the only excusable outcomes are either literally taking a sack is a better outcome than what you did. C.J. Stroud would have been better off going into the fetal position, taking the sack and making the Packers burn their third time out. Or you throw into the end zone and try to get a touchdown, which I don't think it would have been great clock management. It wouldn't have gone with the ethos of what you were doing on first and second down, but it would have been light years better of what you did. That was just stupid. And I don't know who's to blame for it. You know, maybe they had a certain play called and CJ checked into something else and he lost his mind in the moment and threw a pass that stopped the clock. But that combined with, even combined with Seth them kicking it out the back of the end zone on the kickoff. You know what I mean? Like that you're handing the ball at the 30. You know, that's where you feel the that's where you feel the kind of the nerve-wracking of the touchback being at the 30 now is when you got to keep a team from kicking a field goal at the end of the game. You're like, "Ooh, that's not many first downs they need to get into field goal range."
No. Yeah,
the clock doesn't run. You know,
I hate that first down graphic because it just feels like such imminent doom.
Yeah.
The imaginary field goal,
the red stripe.
The spot to get to. Yeah.
The red stripe.
I hate it and I love it. It makes it way more interesting now because you can see the stakes that are involved.
Better when you're on offense.
Yeah, I miss the old days when you can't even really tell where they are.
Ignorance is bliss. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was that. And then, I mean, my head hurt so bad from what they were doing on offense. I didn't have a chance to go see if D'Amico using any of their timeouts when the Packers got near field goal range made any sense. They have three timeouts left, the Texans. Should he have been calling timeouts? At that point, I was so infuriated by the offense, I didn't even care to think about it at that point.
Romo made some good points yesterday, but he also just made the thing that was bothering me the most was him gushing about Bobby Slowick and how brilliant he is. I'm just checking myself. I'm like, wait a second. Okay, they've got 40 yards passing at this point. We're deep into the fourth quarter, and you're telling me that somehow this is a brilliantly executed offensive game plan. What the hell are you talking about, Romo? He did make some points about the. This is an old Bill O'Brien thing, too. You got all these condensed formations, the tight ends, the wide receivers all down at the core of the offensive line, which is awesome if you've got guys who can actually line up and physically handle people, but they don't have those guys.
Yeah.
You have a quarterback who's really actually good against the blitz if given just a little bit. Spread things out so he can see the blitz coming from a mile away.
Right, right.
You know, like instead of it being a massive humanity, it's like a tidal wave pouring over him.
No.
He has no chance because he's got six defenders collapsing the pocket all at once.
I thought it was significant that CJ started to show real frustration on the sideline yesterday. He threw his helmet down at one point on the sideline yesterday.
I approve of his frustration.
I do too, but it was jarring to me. He's not like that. You know, like that's how bad it is right now. You have C.J. Stroud, seriously, one of the coolest customers in the business, throwing his helmet down in frustration on the sideline. That's how bad you suck. Offensive line right now.
It's frustrating as hell. This team justifiably had very high expectations offensively, and I would include that. If you look at the depth chart before the season, if you didn't have Nico Collins, it should still be a pretty good, damn good offense.
No question.
They are a mediocre offense right now.
Yes.
They're middle of the pack in just about everything. Yep. Scoring, all of it. Like they are a tepid offense.
And where would they be?
And there's no excuse for it.
No, and where would they be without Joe Mixon?
I feel bad, man, for all the people that were way more skeptical of Bobby Slowick than I was in the offseason. You and I wondered about the run game and are they going to actually put together a good run game.
Yep.
That was Bobby Slowick's big test. He's failing that miserably.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what we did say that all offseason. Yeah. Bobby Slowick has to show that he can engineer a good rushing offense before he keeps getting all this love as a potential head coach candidate, and he's failing miserably in that regard.
Bloom is off the rose, no doubt. All right, headlines.
Did it in his hometown.
Circle, yeah.
His high school teachers were watching.
That's
that.
That's true. That's embarrassing.
Some of them were like, I always knew he was up. I always knew he'd never make it.
Bobby didn't come home with the team. He sat in detention last night, actually. He stayed up there, and they put him in detention.
He had to go clean up toilet paper out of the trees of the high school football
team. He had to write 1,000 times on the chalkboard, I will not let C.J. Stroud get hit 15 times. All right, headlines.
Ooh, that's my afternoon project now. I'm gonna with my new video editing skills. I'm gonna put Bobby Slowick's head on Bart Simpson's.
Oh, that's a good tease.
And
I like
have him,
that.
Yeah,
good tease. We'll get to the Texans again in headlines. We've got a World Series. in place, college football from over the weekend, and Deshaun Watson out for the season. We will get some interesting audio from that. That's coming up next in headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Texans up one, but here's Brandon McManus, 45-yard attempt, left hash mark. Snap is down, the kick is up, and it's good. The Texans lose as time expires. 24-22 to the Green Bay Packers. Heartbreaker at Lambeau Field.
Our keys to victory this week was executing and finish. Like, we didn't execute well enough. All the way across the board, we didn't execute well enough, and we didn't finish the game. Like, credit to the Packers. They finished it the right way, made the plays when they needed to make it, and they finished the game the right way. But for us to play how we play, you know, offensively, is just not good enough for us. We have to play better. Guys have to execute better, have to step up.
All right, that was D'Amico Ryans leading into his press conference yesterday, following yesterday's 24-22 loss. That was one they could have stolen. I don't feel like they deserve to win the game or anything, Seth. I don't think the three turnovers are what kept them in that game. The offensive line is what lost the game.
You know, I was trying to think about this from the Packers' perspective, though, too, because the Packers dried up offensively in the second half as well.
Yep.
And I think that this is probably... So I was trying to think of it from the Packers' perspective. There was certain ugliness, and obviously they came up with the field goal when it mattered, and kudos to them. But I think that also from a different perspective, if the Texans had won this game, I think it would still very much feel like a lot of the victories they've had where in the morning you're like, I know they won, but listen, this is not sustainable. You're not going to beat the genuinely awesome teams playing this way. We would have been apologizing for being so negative after a victory. And I think that's not just me trying to act like I'm more virtuous or something. That's just the way it's been all year long.
I don't know that I would have, because I don't know that I would have been apologetic at all about it, and here's why. Let's pretend Brandon McManus misses the field goal at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Okay, and they win 22-21. The difference between that game and all the other close games where we've been nitpicking is that they were clearly the better team that allowed these teams to stay in the game. Yesterday, they were the team that was being allowed to stay in the game by the Packers with the three turnovers, I thought, and with, maybe allowing a pass rush. And here's the big thing. None of those other games did I feel like C.J. Stroud had a chance of getting killed on the field. You know, there have been free runners at C.J. all year long, but it hasn't. Yesterday felt like he was in serious danger throughout the game yesterday.
And it's felt, I mean, there's times, too, where the blitz pickup is so bad. We're seeing some of the old-school style QB hits that you don't see that much anymore.
Yep.
Just the guy completely standing like a statue, and he gets hit from the blind side. And some of that, it all goes back to at various times. All right, you can blame Dalton Schultz on that one where the blitzer came free, but they're also in this full turn protection, which is something that you do a lot when your offensive line can't be trusted.
Yep.
And it does put a lot more pressure on the tight ends and the running backs. But certainly the tight ends and the running backs are not innocent or without blame in some of the pass protection issues. It's just that the guys whose bread and butter it is that are supposed to make it easier for those guys, no, they're the Slowick's putting himself in a position where he's having to have tight ends and running backs help out the offensive line.
Yeah, and it's not good, man. It's not good. All right, we'll get back to the Texans top of the hour. We'll kind of relive some of the moments, good and bad, from the game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer, play-by-play man extraordinaire. We'll do Acknowledge Me at 7:20. There are some performances worth acknowledging from that game and around the world of football from over the weekend. The Deshaun Watson story is a big one today, not because he was playing well at all this year, mostly because he was playing poorly and probably was going to be benched at some point. Well, the football gods took care of that one yesterday, I guess. He ruptured his Achilles in the first half of the football game against the Bengals, and it was at home, and evidently there were a lot of Browns fans that were pretty happy about that. I don't know what percentage of them were. It was enough to get Myles Garrett talking about it after the game, Jameis Winston talking about it. We'll get to all of those guys tomorrow on the show. With 2 hours, we've just got so much Texan stuff. Here was Kevin Stefanski, though, with the update on Watson following the game and his reaction to fans cheering the injury.
Are you able to say yet if Deshaun's injury is believed to be season-ending?
I think let's get the test to confirm, but that's what it looks like.
Coach Myles just talked about, the disappointment he had in the fans after Deshaun went down. They were kind of booing and some cheering, even calling for DTR. What was your perspective of that whole situation?
Yeah, I don't think it's ever okay to cheer when someone's injured. I'm sure it's not every person in that building doing that, but that's disappointing.
All right, so okay. There you go.
When I heard that Deshaun Watson got injured, I thought to myself, oh, that's going to be an interesting crowd reaction. And what I would say is...
You're right.
this is a situation where it's perfectly fine to just sit on the fence. I'm not going to make a big moral, grandiose argument about how you shouldn't boo injured people when it comes to Deshaun Watson. Some people are going to boo him for a variety of reasons, but I'm also not going to, like Myles Garrett, stand up and say, quote, he's been a model citizen through college and most of the pros.
You could tell with Miles that he got out over his skis a little bit when he said most of the pros.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw the beginning of that sentence and I listened to it, I'm like, okay, how does he get himself out of this one? Because he has not been a model citizen.
At one point, he did also say, can't judge him for what he does off the field or on the field because I can't throw stones from my glass house.
Yeah.
So he's hedging a little bit there, and he understood. But it's, it is what it is. There's going to be people that boo him in that situation. This is not the moment I'm going to stand up and be like, hey, you people, what are you doing?
And I thought about it this morning, too, as I was listening to a lot of the reaction to it from up in Cleveland on the national shows as well. Deshaun is such a unique situation because he's not just a major, major, major contractual bust. He's not just a bad trade. He was sued by a couple dozen women for some really bad stuff. And he settled those lawsuits, and the league suspended him, and in the process... provided commentary on it to where the judge said, oh, yeah, he did these things.
I mean, and the same thing they said in Texas, which is that basically, okay, the laws are kind of finicky and weird on this, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the NFL judge said, oh, yeah, he did this, hands are tied, and this is the punishment. So, yeah, I don't, like, Deshaun, I'm not going to waste breath trying to defend the, you know, that you reap what you sow, okay?
Yeah.
You reap what you sow.
Yep.
Should you boo somebody when they're injured on the field? Probably no, but you reap what you sow.
There are some interesting football questions that come out of this, I think, and we'll save that for tomorrow. We'll retire Deshaun from the Pettycast tomorrow as well. There's no more reason to kick him around. I think there's some really interesting football questions for the Browns as to what the best approach now is for the season. Do they tank and just get a high pick? They're 1-6 now. Their chances of making the postseason are, according to the broadcast yesterday from London, would be nil. Literally, they put nil on the screen for the loser of yesterday's Jacksonville-New England game, who has the same record as the Browns now, New England.
They have to trade Greg Newsome. I know that much. If there's one thing I know
Texans.
About the Browns, they need to trade one of their stud defensive backs to the Texans.
That would be nice. Yeah, or Delpit, the safety. That would be good, too. The World Series will be the Dodgers and the Yankees. We'll talk about that slightly in the 7 o'clock hour. Oregon is your new number one in the college football poll, which I'm sure your child is thrilled about, Seth.
Yes. My non-sports fan college student who was really put out by the fact that College Game Day was set up in front of the Anthropology building. Hey, Dad. What's this college game time or something? What's going on?
Yeah, game time. That's great. All right, those are your headlines. Of course, Texas loses to Georgia.
My favorite is sending updates on the Oregon scores.
Oh, a troll dad. I love that. All right, let's get back to the Texans yesterday. We love doing this in wins. We love doing it in losses too, because Mark Vandermeer does such a great job on these games. Voice of Vandy. We're going to relive the high points and the low points, the big twists and turns in a game full of them. There were 7 lead changes, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in that game yesterday. We will relive the crazy, crooked highway of the Texans' loss to the Packers coming up next.